July 12, 1979, the White Sox and Tigers were due to play a twinight doubleheader at Comiskey Park. A local radio station, along with White Sox owner Bill Veeck and his son Mike, devised this promotion. Fans who brought their unwanted disco records would get in the game for 98 cents. The records would be collected, placed in a crate in center field, and blown up between games. Comiskey Park was completely sold out, with thousands reportedly outside still hoping for tickets. Then things began to unravel. Many of the fans waiting crashed the gates. After the first game, the crate of disco records exploded as planned. Thousands of fans immediately rushed the field. Some lit fires. The batting cage was destroyed. The field badly damaged. Multiple fights broke out. Veeck got on the PA and pleaded for the fans to return to their seats. They didn't. 39 people were arrested. The umpires declared the field unplayable and called off the second game. Disco Demolition Night took its place as one of the great promotional fiascos of all time. But looking back, what's the big deal? We all know that records were made to be broken.
Didn't Costas better than that?
What, the records are made to be broken?
Come on. And what about the local radio station? Give Steve Dahl credit, for crying out loud. If a man starts a riot, he starts a riot. Let him know.
That's right.
It is the 40th anniversary, Friday, of Disco Demolition. And that's not the line he's on. Steve Dahl joins us now.
I'm on this one.
I run the controls just about as well as anybody. Good morning.
You're right. Would it have killed him to mention my name?
Right. I mean, you started a riot. You should get credit for a riot.
Yeah, come on. I'm the guy they're looking to arrest. I know we have a different... This is our topic, but I just want to tell you something. I made an incredible discovery this morning.
What's that?
I was having my pre-interview meal of shoving a piece of cornbread in my mouth.
Okay, good.
And I told Alexa to turn on the family room lights, and she understood me with my mouth full.
Wow.
Which is kind of a new level of artificial intelligence, I think.
I don't know if that's good or scary.
On several levels, I'm sure.
Right? All right.
I could have choked to death.
So let me go backwards.
Hi, Steve.
Hi, Steve. How are you? Just another day of Steve Dahl and Steve Cochran doing radio together.
A couple of Steves. Steve Squared, we like to call it. Good morning, everybody.
Hello.
News and traffic coming up in just a second, and weather every 5 seconds. Here we go.
Imagine that if we had weather on the fives. Wouldn't that be fun? All right, so 1979, who's your boss? Who was running the joint then?
A guy, his name was Les Elias. And we called him Les. He lied to us because, you know, you always have to say bad stuff about management.
Yes.
But Jeffrey Schwartz was the sales manager, and Mike Veeck kind of cooked the deal up. So,
all right. Now, did you know in the beginning that maybe we had a couple of issues here? You said, no, let's go.
I did not want to do it.
See, that's the thing that people don't know.
That's just me and the reluctant DJ. And also, the Sox were drawing like 9,000 people on a good night.
Right.
So if I doubled that and I drew 9,000 people, which would be a ton for a radio promotion, the place would still be like two-thirds empty. So, you know, not the feel-good I'm looking for. So
right,
I kind of didn't want to do it. They talked me into it, and I had no idea that it would end up, you know, being what it was.
Did you have any inclination it was going to be cheap or free booze?
No. I mean, it was free to me. You know, I was up in the barge room. It was free to me. But honest to God, when I got there at 5 o'clock to sign posters with Lorelei, the Loop Girl, there were maybe a couple hundred people. And we went out to throw out the first pitch because it was like a twinight doubleheader. So I think the first game started at 6 or something like that. And it was Lorelei, the very first Loop Girl,
right,
who was quite beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And myself dressed in my army helmet and my army getup.
Also quite beautiful.
She throws the first pitch, and the catcher comes out and starts hitting on her because she's hot, right? And they walk off the mound together, and I'm standing there holding a baseball. There's nobody to throw it to,
oh,
so I sit there for like 5 minutes. And then try to look cool, like, oh, I knew there was no catcher.
Right.
And put the ball in my pocket and walked off. So that was kind of how the night started. And I figured that was how the night was going to end. But obviously, It ended in a riot.
So it's between games. Kids,
because records are made to be broken.
Yeah, thank you, Bob Costas. So, kids, there was a time in America where doubleheaders were one ticket and you got to stay.
Yeah.
So this crowd was probably a little liquefied by the time that doubleheader break came up anyway. The majority of the crowd there was clearly there for you, for your promotion, for your disco demolition night. When did you have a sense this could get ugly?
Actually, not until I drove onto the we came onto the field through the center field gate where they keep the batting cage.
Yeah,
the destroyed batting cage.
And
we drove around the warning track, and right when we came in, it was like, oh my God! And people were throwing cherry bombs at us and beer, and those were the people that liked us. So I guess I sort of knew when I came out of the security office on 35th Street, and 35th Street looked like Blade Runner with cops on horses. And that was back in the day when they had McCuddy's across the street.
Okay.
And so it was, no one was more, excuse me, I get a little choked up.
Yeah, I understand. Well, it's a sad thing.
And no one was more surprised than I was, but it turned out, you know, to be... in hindsight, 40 years later, a fantastic night. That night, I thought I was going to get fired. So,
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I added it up before you came on, and depending on how you score it, I've been fired between 5 and 10 times. What's your number?
Oh, 5 and 10?
Yeah.
You're a lightweight, man. I'd say I'm getting close to 30.
30?
If you count my entire career starting out in California, yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
I'm not even in the game. So
I've been on most stations in Chicago 10 times.
There was a little bit of that, wasn't there?
Yeah.
So when did you find out what Jimmy Pearsall said, that he went nuts on you on the air?
When I came back up from the ceremony on the field, Jimmy was arguing with my wife, Janet, who's still my wife, about the proceedings, because he was upset with the proceedings, and wearing an outpatient T-shirt. He was wearing an outpatient T-shirt.
And
I guess I kind of figured it out then when I had to break up a fight between Jimmy and my wife.
It's not good. So, Janet's just doing the right thing, sticking up for you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think she could have taken him, too, frankly.
Probably so. Dave?
Well, Steve, wasn't part of it that Bill Veeck thought that Harry Caray could settle the crowd back down somehow, and they put him on the mic?
Yeah, Harry tried to do it. Then Bill came down on the field and did it. And I have to say that my only regret that night, or about that night, is the fact that it really did affect the Veeck family's ownership of the team. And I've always been a huge fan of Bill Veeck. So, you know, I did not mean to bring any trouble down on him.
Well, no, of course not. No, I mean,
he went out and tried to get people back off the field, and then I made a fake offer like I would do it, but I was hoping they wouldn't take me up on it, because it didn't seem like that would be the awesome outlaw look I was going for. Like
that,
okay, everybody get back in your seats now.
That would have been like Bartman going back out onto Wrigley that night. That would not have been a good idea.
Right, and so I think Mitch Michaels, who was on the loop at the time, came out and did he did a, like, go to your seats chant or something like that, but that doesn't really ring like disco sucks, so that didn't work either.
All right, so did you change clothes, and if you didn't, how did you get out of the stadium?
I just waited until everybody left. I got lectured by my boss. He told me that Tom Hoyt was his name. He's from Texas. He goes, whatever you do, be cool tomorrow. And I'm like, okay, so whatever that means.
Wait, what does that mean?
It meant don't talk about it.
Look, please, are you kidding me?
No, I'm not. He goes, I don't want you talking about this tomorrow.
Okay.
I'm serious.
Okay, yeah, okay.
And so I was like, oh, great. Okay, so how can I not go in and talk about it, especially when it's on the front page of both papers?
All over TV, all over the country.
Yeah.
And by the way, this is the 3-channel universe, and this was a national story.
Yeah, this is before there was any social media or anything to distract us. This was this is back when they were, well, really, the loop, there were 2 rock and roll stations in Chicago, that was it.
Right.
And maybe, you know, 20 altogether that people listened to. So it was a pretty big deal, and there was no way I couldn't talk about it and retain my credibility, which is what got me there in the first place. So.
Right, that's what was paying the bills.
Yeah.
All right, so you didn't get fired. How much longer were you there?
another year or so.
This thing continues. To me, Steve, this is as big now as it's ever been. It seems like more people are talking. I mean, I've been in town 25 years. There's more people talking about this now than there was 25 years ago.
I know. It's kind of every year I marvel at the fact that I'm still talking about it. But, yeah, I know for a lot of people my age, your age, too, I guess. It was just kind of like one last fun shot of freedom and, rock and roll and summer and baseball and getting high and drinking beer because the drinking age was 18. So, dropped that down to 16 that night. Right. And it was a fun night, and I think people like to remember it that way.
So. Yeah, the Loop ID fake vending booth was big that night. Fake ID vending booth. yeah. All right, so listen, you and I
That's
both...
That's where I made all my money.
You and I are both grandparents now. Now, you got a bunch of grandkids. Some of them are old enough to get this. Do they realize how cool you were then?
They realized a couple weeks ago, the White Sox had a free T-shirt night where they gave away a 40th anniversary Disco Demolition commemorative shirt, and I threw out the first pitch, and I think they sort of got that I was cool that I was able to throw out the first pitch. So we're getting there. The oldest one's only 8, so.
It's a work in progress.
Yeah, yeah. And how many do you have? How many?
I had one and one on the way.
Dude, I have 9.
Yeah, I know.
And one on the way.
You need to tell the boys to get a hobby and leave their wives alone.
Well, I think they figured out why it happens now, so. They never listened to me when we had the talk. Never.
All right, so you're a lifetime White Sox fan. How long was it before you could go to a game again?
I waited. I kind of laid low for maybe 2 or 3 years. And Rob Gallis was the PR guy back then. He was pretty cool, and he stuck me in a couple of times. And then once they changed ownership, everything was kind of forgiven and forgotten. So,
tons of great texts about you. Everybody wants you back on the radio, and I appreciate you coming on to talk about this. And like you said, it's crazy. It's bigger than ever. But Bob Costas.
Well, thanks for having me, man.
Yeah.
And, I got to say, I love radio. You're one of the few stations in the market that still actually does what radio is supposed to do, and that's, be a local station and talk to people about what's happening around here. And in the meantime, I do a podcast every day, and that's fun for me. And
yeah, and people can hear it where?
Doll.com. But the only person that tells me what to do now is my wife, so.
Well, thank God you're still listening.
No program directors or anything, so that's good.
Yeah, and by the way, if everybody that's texting me now is actually at Disco Demolition, there were 150,000 people there that night.
Yeah, I've met a lot of people that were there, though. It's when I was there the other night for the T-shirt night, one of the security guards was there. As a 14-year-old, he climbed up over the back wall of Comiskey Park and got in. So, some crazy stories out there.
That's pretty cool. Hey, sometimes I'll tell you about the big red gum event I did in Detroit once. Not quite as big as this. Didn't quite last as long.
Yeah, but it's gone, man. You got rid of it, and that's the important thing.
Steve Dahl, 40-year anniversary. Happy anniversary.
Thanks, buddy.
See you later, man. That's Steve Dahl.